people out there. You got the Hacksaw Laser Show. This is episode number 6 for April the 25th on Saturday. Always make sure to go listen to our directory for the directory of our laser show numbers, since we archive them over the phone here on the Laser Network, hence the name Hacksaw Laser Show. That number is 206-888-5819. The number that you are currently connected to is 206-984-7604. That's 206-984-7604. You can get our archived episodes in MP3 format up at hackermedia.net/hacksaw. You can also get them at hbx.us/hacksawlaser. And you can also get them up on audio text files.
There's a tilde in this, the HBX.
Oh, that's right.
And it's also Sunday.
Okay. Today is Sunday, right?
It's Saturday.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Did I? I didn't even catch that. Okay, I said it's Sunday, the 25th.
I thought it was Saturday.
I don't know. It is Sunday.
It is Sunday.
No, today is Sunday. Yeah,
wow.
I got to work tomorrow. Okay, anyways, back to the show. Episode number 6, we got Strom Carlson on tonight for you guys. We also have Avid.
Hey.
We got Hairball.
Woohoo!
We got Lotech.
What's going on?
We got Tron.
Hello. He's not there.
Okay, Tron's not there, I guess. And we got we got Strom. And
hello.
And anybody on the 660 right now?
We don't have that on here anymore.
Okay.
Yeah. We got 660 on.
Okay, you got 660 on?
Yeah.
Okay. We got the different extension three-wayed into this one, basically for people to call in to give Strom questions and stuff like that, since that's going to be our general format for tonight, outside of talking about whatever he wants to talk about. So let's get this started. Strom, who are you and what do you do?
Well, I am a phone freak, and I pretty much spend my time learning everything I can about the phone network. So,
well, that's cool.
There's nothing that isn't sacred territory to me.
Nice. So, how deep in the telco have you gotten yourself so far? Like, well, what are you studying right now in the telco?
Oh, what am I studying right now? Lately, I've kind of been studying just. There was a point where I was studying the whole SS7 protocol,
mm-hmm.
and then I kind of got everything that I wanted to out of that. I really couldn't. I need to study it more. I couldn't find any good books on the subject. They were all technical, but didn't focus on the application of any of the protocol. All
right.
So what I think I need to look for is like some sort of ISPN book, actually. Nice. But as far as what I'm doing now, lately I haven't been doing much. I've been really busy with work and everything else. But now I've been writing the script that will give you basically a comprehensive report of everything in the lurk related to one area code and prefix that you punch in.
Now, how is that different from the lurk itself as opposed to its interface?
Well, I mean, the lurk itself is just a huge database. There is no interface to it. Either you have a Microsoft Access database, you can run, you know, queries in Microsoft Access, or you have a set of flat ASCII files that you can do what you want with.
So you're writing a front end for the LARG?
Basically, yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah, it's coming out quite nicely.
And what kind of information is available in your system that is currently not available anywhere else?
Well, I mean, I don't know about currently not available anywhere else, but it basically the advantage is that it gives you up-to-date data directly from LARG instead of relying on, you know, outdated stuff like telcodata.us or anything else. Or
exactly.
There's often bits of information that are missing or wrong or
How up to date is the LARG?
It depends on what issue you get. Every copy, they publish it once a month.
Once a month.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Currently, I'm running October data, but I should be getting an update soon.
Nice.
Very, very nice.
Now, when will this be available for everybody to use?
That I'm not quite sure of, just because you know.
Or select few
like
people.
This on the web is yeah. Putting something like this on the web is bound to create a hell of a lot of traffic if
right.
the URL gets out.
Yeah.
And much as I would like to do that, I also much would like very much if Telcordia wasn't banging down my door with a lawsuit.
Right. Is that what they're currently trying to do?
No, but I'd like to avoid that if possible.
Right.
So, I don't know, maybe I'll do, you know, some sort of website where people I deem who aren't going to abuse the system are getting
right.
a login and a password or whatever. But if people want to email me and have me run reports for them on whatever they want, I'll be happy to do that.
Right.
Well, that's actually a pretty interesting way of doing it, because then you can, you know, exactly know who you're dealing with.
Well, is there right. any chance of you, putting out a sanitized version?
How do you sanitize that?
You know?
Yeah, what would I sanitize exactly?
Yeah.
like, have some robot go through and randomly wipe out bits of data from LURG.
Yeah, you know.
So I understand that you recently took a trip to the Telephone Museum.
I did. I went up to Seattle, Washington, and made a recording there of the all the equipment in that Telephone Museum. Basically, I made a recording of using the step-by-step switch.
Nice.
Made a recording of using the number one crossbar, the number five crossbar, the panel switch, and there's also a CX100 there, which is manufactured by North Electric. And that's an interesting little thing. It's all relays. And you can actually, there's already a recording of it. If you go to phonetrips.com and click on the, I think it's Eastern Washington, it's Eastern Washington with Chris Bernay,
yeah.
May 1970, I think,
nice.
Is the one.
Now
and that's the one where they go to the town of Leicester and use the phone there, and that switch is now in the museum.
Oh, really? That real one?
That exact switch, yeah.
So this thing is compromised of entirely relays?
It's completely made of relays, yep.
Wow.
Well, originally it was on a ship, actually. I mean, don't ask me what the hell they needed 10 party lines for on a battleship, but that's what it was. It was on a battleship, and that's what they used the phone system for, and apparently they switched that switch out for something else just before the ship went out and got sunk in World War II or something like that.
Wow.
Although that barely escaped being destroyed.
Wow.
Yeah, that did.
That's a pretty little bit of
history. And then it escaped the town of Leicester being destroyed, so I guess it's one of those switches that has a survival epic to it.
Wow.
So are you in the process of getting ready to publish these recordings?
Yeah, I just have the raw recordings now. What I really need to do is go through and narrate everything.
And maybe do a little
And then it'll probably be on Phone Trips now on my website.
Right.
So look for that.
I'll definitely do that.
That'll be great fun, because the other thing, of course, is that everything you hear on Phone Trips now was all recorded using analog tape. And one of the problems with using analog tape machines is very often they don't allow you to turn off the automatic gain control. So, and because of the way that telephones work, you know, just the sounds have a very large dynamic range, and the fact is that whenever you go from periods of extreme quiet to periods of extreme noisiness very quickly, and the automatic gain control really isn't designed to keep up with that. So if you listen to the tapes, you'll hear the ring go. Then you hear the noise coming, get louder, and so you really lose the true range and the true dynamics of the recording. And the recordings I've made were made without automatic gain control on a digital recorder, and the quality is just absolutely amazing compared to what you've heard so far.
Nice.
What do you usually use to record your calls with?
Whenever I make recordings, I use a Sony mini disc recorder. And usually if I'm at a payphone, I'll be using a shitty Radio Shack pickup coil, and the way those work best is if you kind of cram the suction cup up to the earpiece and then listen with headphones. But for the museum, I actually made a series of homemade recording patches that plug directly into a Western Electric 500 set, and so that's where the recordings come from this time.
So the only reason I
did that was because it would be better quality, A, and B, there's so much, you know, fluorescent lighting and electromagnetic interference in that museum that I don't think you'd be able to get a good recording of the pickup coil.
So would it be safe to say that you have on your hands some of the highest quality recordings ever made of this particular equipment?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I would say that's, without a doubt, a true statement.
One of the more annoying things about Phone Trips is they use real audio. Whenever you publish your stuff up there, what format do you plan on putting it on?
Well, when it goes on Phone Trips, most likely it'll go on there in real audio because everything else on Phone Trips is real audio. But if I do it on my website, I may do some sort of MP3 format.
Okay, that sounds fair.
Saw through audio.
Proprietary.
Doesn't
so...
let the fucking player, Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, even if it's proprietary, I mean, the format is so widely in use, and the player is free and everything, so, I mean, I understand the reason behind it for on a political level, but as far as technically, it's not that bad.
Okay, you got me there. So I understand that you have quite the collection of payphones as well.
Well, as far as actual payphones themselves, I only own one, but...
that's more than most people.
That is true. Not many phone freaks own a Nortel Millennium payphone.
Nice.
But as far as... where was I going? As far as photographs of payphones, I have a huge collection of them, and I actually, from my Southern California trip, there's recordings online of my Southern California trip, but I have not actually... so far gone through and put up all the photographs I took.
Wow.
So I still have a huge collection of those to put up on my webpage.
Are there still any really, really old multiple slot payphones still in use somewhere in the U.S.? Or have they all moved to the single slots?
All the three-slot payphones were pretty much done away with in the 1970s. It was rare to find one even in the 1980s. So I really don't think you're going to find one in actual service anywhere, except as like museum pieces. Like, in the phone museum, obviously, in their lobby, they have a three-slot connected to their number 5 crossbar. But that's, you know, in the museum.
Right, right.
Of course, what's cool about that one is the number card and the dial says area code 311-555-2368.
Oh, they really did that, didn't they?
They did.
Oh, man. So where's this museum at, and what's it cost to get in?
Well, it's free to get in.
Okay.
It's only open on Tuesdays, however. If you want to go any time else, you have to call and make an appointment. And, I mean, they ask for a donation, but if you don't have enough money to make a donation, you don't have to. It's located in just south of Seattle. If you go, if you search on the web for Museum of Communications, I forget the URL, but you'll find it.
Okay.
Untitled 1.2.
Let me do a service to all our listeners and get that URL here.
So, how many people show up to these things on Tuesday? Is it packed, or is it kind of like you have to place it yourself?
I don't know, really. I went there on Saturday.
What was that? Oh, you went there by yourself?
I went there on a Saturday, yeah.
Oh, that's cool. So you also have a large collection of system phones as well. Like, I saw some Meridians on your website before, and like nice PBX systems and whatnot.
What do you mean, a collection of system phones?
Phones that require, like, a brains. Like, not just your everyday phone that hooks to the lines, but ones that require, sort of like PBX systems.
PBX extension.
Oh, right.
The only phones that I really have that do that, I have an AT&T Merlin system in the garage, but that's about it.
Well, it's still, again, more than most people would have.
True, but not. I wouldn't call it a nice collection, it's just kind of a...
Who said they got an AT&T Merlin system?
That's me.
Do you know if the voicemail default on that, is it the extension number 3 times?
That one doesn't have a voicemail system. Mine was manufactured in 1984. It doesn't... I don't know which Merlin you're talking about, but this is the original AT&T Merlin.
We have a Merlin at work, and most of the default passcodes are the extension number 3 times, and they have 2 digits.
But which variety of Merlin is it? Is it the Merlin Magic?
I'm not sure. I haven't got a chance.
How old is it?
I haven't got a chance to look at it.
See, the original AT&T Merlin is just basically a glorified 182 key system, except it doesn't have any of the relays or anything. It's basically just you plug in up to 4 telephone lines and up to 8 to 12 telephone sets, and you basically have access to those phone lines from the phone from the telephone sets. That's pretty much it.
And these are all mechanical phones.
Big pardon?
These mechanical phones, or they communicate?
No, this is from 1984. The it's all kind of.
I have an old AT&T. I have an old AT&T key system I bought for $5. It's basically the size of probably like a 286, a little smaller actually.
Yeah, a 182. That I'm sure has all, you know.
That accepts Merlin phones, Merlin type phones, and then it's got two jacks for the central office lines.
Yeah, that would be a Merlin. I think it's a Merlin. one that had two-line capability, I think, had four telephone
sets. I think it has eight hands that you can plug in.
Okay, yeah.
I picked that thing up for $5 if you want it.
Awesome. Well, I'll see. I have the one that I think takes four CO lines. So.
So what we do here? Are we hiring rejects from that other hack radio show now?
So, we hiring rejects from default now?
I told you it would be a bad idea to have Tron on.
Yeah. Don't start. Just forget about it. Okay, right. Next question, please.
Oh, is this a radio show? Or?
Uh-huh. Who is that, Lucky?
Radio show.
Yeah, no,
I asked if Lucky wanted to be on, because we're going to be having Tron on. I felt that Lucky could, throw out some good questions to Strom and stuff.
Well, now he knows what's going on. He's probably going to leave now.
No. I'll stay around.
No, there's no tension or nothing.
Surprisingly, the website for the Museum of Communications is museumofcommunications.org.
Very easy to remember.
Nice.
Now, how big is this museum?
Well, where is this museum at? I think I've been there.
It's in Seattle, Washington. It's at the corner of Corson Avenue and Marginal Way.
No, I was at another museum. I think it was in,
yeah?
It was over by Louisiana somewhere, because I went there on my way to New Orleans. And that was a weird museum. It's got, like, a bunch of operator codes and stuff, like, in there. Like, it's got, like, key pulse 121 start is inward. So I was like, whoa, I fear the codes.
Awesome. Yeah, this one, basically the way it's set up is the bottom floor is still currently a Quest Central office. There's a 5E in there. And then the top two floors are the museum.
And that actually lets you look at the Quest equipment? Is that part of the
floor? No, the modern office is not part of the museum. That's still, you know...
Well, can you look through, like, glass and see it at all? Or is it kind of like, you know it's there?
No, I don't think so. They really didn't bother remodeling the building. They just didn't have any use for the top two floors anymore, so they started donating stuff about 1985 or so.
We need to talk those two together.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, what I've actually been considering is arranging a giant tour where we, you know, get all the phone freaks together and go to the museum.
That would be really cool.
That would be pretty awesome, I think.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah.
So they had no problem letting you hook your own equipment to the systems there at the museum?
Oh, not at all.
Bring your own phone, your own recorder.
Yeah, I brought my own phone and my recording patches and everything, but no, they had no problem letting me do that.
Nice.
I mean, they've kind of wised up. I mean, in back in the days of the Bell system, of course, if you wanted to connect anything other than your own telephone, you know, the phone company would have you rent these little protection devices to protect your precious network from your horrible, horrible equipment.
Right.
And what were these protections?
Before that, they wouldn't even let you do that. It was, you rented a phone from the phone company, and any other phones that you bought, you weren't even allowed to connect to your line.
Right.
There
were varying levels. There were things that were just, you know, audio path only, and then they got more complex. They would have devices that would simulate a telephone line and connect the audio path and all sorts of stuff. But typically the way it would work is that if you just rented the cheapest one available and didn't even hook it into your line, then they would kind of just shut up and not bug you anymore.
Oh, wow.
So it was pretty much just a way of getting more money, I think.
Yeah. Bell famous for that.
Well, I know, because I've talked to Scott, who lived through that era, and he said, you know, like when they used to rent stuff, they'd have the actual, like, ringer equivalency number of the phone that you were renting. And if that equivalency changed by too much, a flag would go off in the CO, and they'd actually send someone out from Bell to your house.
Mm-hmm.
They were anal about it?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, of course, because, you know, every phone they rented, you know, got them an extra $3 a month or something. And back in those days, when $3 was a hell of a lot of money, when a payphone call cost you 10 cents.
Right.
Nice.
That's pretty... I didn't know they did that. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were really anal about it. That's why you couldn't be hooking up your own shit to your phone line.
Well, I mean, as long as you disconnected the ringer, you'd be fine because they can't detect a phone that has no ringer in it.
Right.
Yeah.
But how many people would know that? You know.
Well, if you're going to the trouble of hooking up your own phone, you should probably find that out.
Yeah.
Right.
I think it's still that way now, right?
Well, no, it's not that way now. The well, yeah, as far as I'm not being able to find a phone that has no ringer on, sure, but they don't care how many phones you plug in.
Yeah, I don't think they even pay attention to that anymore.
Yeah.
So, where'd you acquire all your payphones from?
Beg your pardon?
Where'd you acquire all your payphones?
I know where Strom got one of his phones, a little fucker.
It's not with Disney, you'll have to answer.
What do you mean?
No, no, where did you acquire all your payphones? Like, what were your methods of acquiring them?
Well, no, I only own one payphone. Everything else that Hairball's talking about is all just photographs, I think.
Right. Well, how did you acquire your Millennium, though?
eBay.
Right.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Pay for it.
eBay.
That's the fun part. Yeah, so $57 for my Millennium.
$57 for your Millennium.
Wow, that's 13.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I paid $400 for an Axe phone, and this guy gets a Millennium for $57.
Wow.
The problem is that if you don't have the Millennium Manager system as well,
right,
the phone is pretty much a useless hunk of metal.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it still tries to dial the switch, though, right? I mean, your Millennium tries to dial the switch when you plug it in, right?
Well, no, it tries to dial the...
The manager?
The manager, yeah.
Oh, wow. So how do you go about getting the manager?
Well, see, that's the thing. Either you can find the number of an existing manager,
mm-hmm,
and then plug the phone number of a phone that's served by that manager into your phone,
right,
and then just any random serial number, then it'll download the appropriate information for that phone. So, I mean, this phone that I have has been, you know, a post office in Seattle. It's been a phone on the street in Vancouver. It's been a phone in one of the casinos here in Las Vegas.
You were able to track the history down on that phone?
Beg your pardon?
Is this just an example, or are you actually able to track down this phone's history?
So I'm saying those are the numbers that I've made it think it is.
Ah, okay.
The actual phone itself used to be owned by U.S. West, and I don't know where it was in service, but it's in pretty much complete condition except for the fact that it's missing the upper housing block and the coin box. So,
did it come with keys?
Yeah, it came, the one lock it had came with a key.
Wow.
Have you tried the key on other Millennium phones?
No, all the locks are unique.
All the locks are unique, or just most of them?
I would think all of them.
Because I know that for regular payphones, like, it's pretty much like soda machines, you know. It doesn't open up all of them, but, you know, usually 1 in 10 will open.
So what kind of stuff can you do on a Millennium phone at the keypad? Can you program it in any way?
Not really.
No?
You can run coin tests and whatnot, but even if you have access to the Craftist test menu, pretty much the only thing you can do is run certain tests on the phone or, you know, just force it to download the data again from the manager.
So all
the programming happens on the back end.
Now, if it was possible to intercept that data transfer, would you be able to send... would you be able to man in the middle of a phone and get some fake information in there?
What do you mean?
Wait for it to dial the number and then emulate the manager on your end and send it bogus information?
Well, if I were going to that trouble, I would just have it dial my own number.
Well, that's what I mean, and then on your end...
The thing is, it doesn't use anything resembling a standard modem type phone.
Huh. I know what it uses.
Well, do you have any manuals for the Millennium Manager? For the actual system? No? No logins or anything?
But Hairball, you said you think you know what it uses?
Yeah, my uncle works for a security company, and we do uploads and downloads of security systems using a special kind of modem, but I'm almost willing to bet it uses the same protocol. Does it sort of sound like a weird TTY, but not quite TTY? Or have you had an opportunity
to listen
to it?
Well, most of the phone company shit uses a 7-bit parity one, right?
Well, no, but it's not the same tones as any...
Yeah, or it's probably some funky Bell, you know, XXX protocol.
Right.
Oh. Well, anyway,
Now, you had said before that there's really no way to get free calls on a Millennium phone while it's actually being powered.
No, there is.
Well, there are, but none of them are terribly reliable. If if for just so long as you can lead the phone to believe that the call you're on is still up, but the CO line gives you a new dial tone, you're fine.
Yeah, but don't the CO line usually do a polarity reverse?
There's a better reliable way that if you want to use a specific payphone that you can keep going back to, you can put a switch underneath using a bridge inverter, or I'm sorry, a rectifier. With a
rectifier?
Yeah. And then, you know, and then it'll just keep the voltage or the polarity at the same level. So it'll never know that the call was answered.
Right. Although typically if I'm not entirely sure on this, but if the phone is set to detect polarity reversal, I think until the polarity reverses, it does not connect the mouthpiece up.
No, it does. On the Millenniums, you have full access.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so you can just put a bridge rectifier in there.
And of course, that requires physical access to the lines. You have to do this somewhere on the phone line, down the line somewhere.
Well,
yeah,
somewhere you could. You might be able to do it inside the payphone. I'm not entirely sure, but I know you could. If you can get physical access to the phone line, you could put a switch in there, and then just, you know, when you're using it, put the switch on, and then when you're gonna leave, just flip the switch off. Everyone else will have to pay. You know,
That's a pretty cool method for that.
Nice.
Yeah, there's a file on that online already. Because when the Millenniums first came out, that was the first thing I was trying to find out how to do. And, you know, you just go to Radio Shack, buy a bridge rectifier for, like, 99 cents.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
yeah. Well, see, mine has been pretty much sitting off on my floor for about 3 months now. I haven't done anything with it.
Well, what the hell? Send that shit to CO Box 1111, Guasi, California.
Okay, Guasi.
You should change your handle to Guasi.
Yeah.
Wow.
Lost the energy, dog.
Now, Hermel, do you have any of those modems by any chance, or?
They're readily available. What you want is the Hayes SmartBone 2400. It's actually Go ahead.
I don't know. It doesn't sound like any other modem tone I've ever heard. Is the thing.
I'd have to hear it before I can tell you for sure if it would work. But in my little spiel about the HBX wardelling project, I mentioned that we have a really special modem. Mm-hmm. And what's so special about it is it supports protocols that shortly after this modem was released, the FCC regulated that no modem available to the public can no longer handle this particular protocol. Mm-hmm. It's what's used in high security applications, banking communications, some of them, security alarms, and I do believe the payphones use them as well. And my uncle owns a security company, and we do remote programming on security alarms. Some idiot forgets their password, we can just call their phone number, and it sends a special pulsing tone over the line. Their alarm picks up, and we can just read their stuff off of it. And it sounds like a TTY, but it's a lot different. I'd have to let you hear it, but it may be the same protocol they use for the payphone. I don't know. You know if it's an extremely slow baud system? I mean, does it take a long time to do the transfer?
It doesn't take an extremely long time.
But it's not quick either.
I'm just
trying
to think how quickly how much time it would take to hook this thing up and recall what manager numbers I have, and then
I'll be right back.
Okay. Well, maybe if I first before I bother plugging the phone back in, maybe if I go back and find my listing of the manager numbers that I have,
we can just call one up and we'll listen to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
This is all really interesting. It'd be cool if we can emulate that, but then you won't have to rely on the magic numbers you have, and you can just put your own information in there by making the call yourself.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, figure out the protocol, figure out what it wants, and
now these manager systems, they control like the rates, what numbers can be dialed, and so and such.
Uh-huh, they have the rate tables, they control what numbers you can dial, what messages appear on the phone, so on.
I might control a small city or a large city, or how sparse are these numbers?
Well, I don't know exactly. I remember I called up Cortec, which is the division of Nortel that was divested that handles the Millennium phones, and I called up inquiring as to how much it would cost to get a contract with them to do one phone for their manager, and they said, you need to do at least 50 phones with us.
Wow.
So
sounds like
I
they just shut you down.
Can you pardon?
So it sounds like they just wanted to shut you down.
No, I see, the thing is, there's a lot of effort that goes into programming all the data.
Oh, is there?
And so I think the only thing is, I could do it, but it would have been completely non-economical for me to do anything less than 50 phones.
Wow.
It would have been just some ridiculous amount of money.
Jeez.
Now, so if you were able to, I mean, this is all server-side stuff on their end. Do you actually buy the manager equipment and program it, or do you call one of their systems and it goes that way?
Well, I think to purchase a manager is a hell of a lot of money, but you can contract with them to do that.
So it would theoretically be possible to hack one system and change the rates on thousands of payphones in a certain area.
Well, theoretically, yeah, but that would be kind of, you know, the kind of thing they'd notice.
They wouldn't notice right away. It took them a few hours.
A few hours.
If you only change the rates on, like, one area code, no one's going to notice.
Mm. Yeah, or one phone specifically, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure if the software would allow changing one phone specifically. But I think it would be really fun to make all the phones in a city free for a few days until they catch on.
Perhaps. Yeah. You just have a message scrolling across, local calls are free! with 75 E's, of course. Free!
Courtesy of HBX.
This phone has been hacked. Enjoy it while it lasts.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I can definitely see a project like that.
I can take notes
of all the stuff I learned on the show.
I've actually got a manual for the Millennium Manager. It was a large text file posted on alt.freaking a while ago. Trying to dig it up.
Is there
is there a
login control panel on the internet to program your phones, or?
No, it's more of just dialing in and
dialing an 800 number.
Yeah.
I think the 800 number, I think, for Bell Canada or Verizon, one of those Millennium Managers was already posted on the internet.
Nice.
Might be changed by now, though. That was a couple of years ago.
Yeah. See, the thing about numbers like that is it's such a pain in the ass to change them. Because you got to go around and reprogram how many phones to call the new number.
Well, no, you just reprogram it through that number. You know?
I think that's possible.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Duh.
I don't know what I thought of that.
Of course, then again, if you were reprogramming it through that number, there's a possibility that someone might intercept it and get the new number.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but you're right. I mean, there's never a win situation there.
Now, of course, the ultimate stupidity would be if you dialed it over the phone, you got, the number you have reached has been changed. The new number is area code.
And that's exactly something the phone company would do.
Yeah.
Now, imagine hacking into one of those things and, like, changing the number to, like, the White House or something, and you're, like, 1,000 payphones all over New York City calling the White House.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I shouldn't even have mentioned
that. That wouldn't get you in trouble at all.
Like. Yeah, no.
This is all theoretical, and I don't actually want anyone to do this. This is just an example.
It's nothing but a ticket, people. it's just a damn reorder ticket.
So I saw on your website a while ago that you did some recordings up in, Pahrump, Nevada?
Oh, yeah, I went out to Pahrump and made recordings.
Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah.
Well, that was interesting. Well, actually, first, I found my number to the manager. Let me just dial it and see if it's still up.
All right.
Excellent.
You won't be able to pass touch tone over here, though.
Yeah, please don't pass
touch tone. I'm dialing it over my box line.
Okay.
This is the joy of having five telephones on your desk.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a pretty cool thing.
As long as DTMF doesn't pass.
Mm-hmm.
I have about 50 other places in your room.
Yeah. Pahrump. Isn't that where Art Bell lives?
Yeah, that is.
No, really?
Yeah, really, Art Bell is a prompt.
Speaking of Art Bell, I listened to a little segment on Mel's Hole.
Yeah?
Oh, come on. I don't understand how that could be anywhere near possible.
Well. Yeah. I don't know, you drive from what you will.
Why is it censored on Terra server, then?
Yeah, not only that, I mean...
It's a military base or something.
No, now... Now it might be under
the line. I'll line tie it in now.
All right, here we go.
the government seize that property for a while anyway.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
That's all it does?
Well, yeah. And then,
Really, I found a watch number that does that same tone.
Nice.
Yeah. See, that's what it starts out with, then the phone starts handshaking with it, and then you hear the protocol starting to go.
Huh.
It might be the same thing. I'm going to record the communications between a security system and a computer.
Nice.
Sometime this week, and I'll play it to you. You can tell me if it sounds similar.
Nice.
Because an older Hayes modem can emulate that very easily.
Mm. Oh, awesome.
Well, I'm not for sure if it sounds similar. We'll have to do some further investigation. But why don't you tell us about...
I'm Googling for Millennium Manager, and according to this real estate website, Lynn Robinson is the Millennium Manager.
Can we dial into her?
Can we dial into her? Does she have a trunk?
So tell us about Pahrump, Nevada. First of all, is that how I pronounce it? Pahrump?
Yeah, it's Pahrump.
Yeah, Pahrump.
Pahrump.
But it is, Pahrump is an interesting situation because it's a Nevada Belt town, but it homes on a non-Bell system tandem. In this case, the Sprint tandem in downtown Las Vegas.
Hmm.
So the thing I wanted to go out there to test was to see, you know, what coin control would be like, because it homes on this tandem for operator services, and in Las Vegas there are no more ACTS-type phones.
Right.
There are none in all of Las Vegas?
There's none. It's all Cocotte out here.
That's
wrong. It's all Millenniums, right?
Well, the telephone company has Millenniums, and then there's, like, one private company that has Millenniums, and the rest are the really crappy Cocottes.
Yeah.
Wow.
So is it safe to say that the ACTS phones are slowly dying and they're going to disappear in the next few years for good?
Well, I don't know about slowly dying. Very slowly, perhaps. But disappearing in a few years, I don't think that's likely to happen. There's a number of companies for, like, you know, the Bell system companies where I think the cost of replacing all the phones with the Millenniums is so high right now and payphone revenues are so low that it's probably cheaper for them just to leave the existing stuff in place.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, I think there's going to be access service for a long while afterwards. I mean, I know Verizon is replacing a lot of the phones with Millenniums, but we still have some ACTS phones. And there's this antique store in Ontario that's got a Cocotte on the side of it, which is sort of like those half-bred Verizon pay phones, where this is an actual privately owned Cocotte, but it also uses ACK for toll calls.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know a system like that existed.
Yeah, I didn't know a Cocotte actually had the capability of having a totalizer in it and everything. But, yeah, it does.
Yeah, well, I mean, originally, the Cocottes were kind of hybrid phones. They were kind of half Western Electric-type phone and half Cocotte.
Hmm, yeah.
I
don't know what the point of that would be, since, I mean, they already made it a Cocotte, so they might as well make the whole damn phone a Cocotte. Like, why are they going to make it relying on ACTS when it already can be programmed for...
Well, actually, Evan Doorbell has a recording, I don't know if he's going to release it, but I've heard it, of him and Les playing around with a Cocotte in 1986, I want to say, in Atlanta, and... That, basically, they relied heavily on operators at the time. So I can see why they need to generate tones.
Hmm.
So, I see that. Well, I could see that, but I mean, I don't know, I guess they were figuring, instead of just giving long-distance calls for a flat rate, they'd rather have it charged by the phone company, and I guess they figured they'd make more money like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they'd make more money just, you know, asking $1 for 4 minutes like they usually do.
Well,
right.
So I understand it. It's because the phone itself isn't smart enough to do the calculations on how much money it's going to cost for a call.
Yeah, don't forget, this was 1986.
A lot of Cocottes, you can program the area code in exchange and then base the rate off of that. But why even do that? Just make it a flat rate. Say, if you're making a call that's not local, $2.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember from from Cocotte, it used to be possible to dial the old Alliance teleconferencing number really easily because the phone would just assume anything that started with a zero was operator assisted and just put it right through for you. And for the long, that's cool. And for the longest time in my area, the local annex was 711, and that's before the nationwide hearing impaired thing came along.
Uh-huh.
And I used to just dial 711, and the phone would put it right through. And of course, after some reading your number back to it, drops you to a second dial tone.
Nice.
That worked up all the way to like 98.
So. I'll be right back.
Yeah, actually, in my area, on this only works on the. No, that's not true. It works on Chino and Pomona switch. It used to be a 117 with Proctor test set, and I was a kid when I was playing with this, so I decided I'd do it backwards, so I tried 711. For the longest time in my area, that would get you 911.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Out there in San Diego, I think Proctor is 611.
611 is the standard number for repair, though.
Yeah, no, yeah. Out in San Diego, though, 611 will get you Proctor.
See, I've never been able to find my local Proctor number.
Yeah, it was weird because sometimes when you dialed 711, it was like the police knew that you were calling 711, not 911, because they'd answer dispatch instead of 911.
Hmm.
Oh, it was the same office. It's sort of like Chicago's non-emergency 811.
Huh.
Yeah, but this predated like 311 and everything. But sometimes they'd answer dispatch, other times they'd answer 911.
Right.
Kind of weird.
When my local city, and this only works in the vicinity of my local city, if you dial 211 from a regular ACTS payphone, we got plenty of them around here. It will give you directory assistance without asking for your 50 cents, but you don't get the option to dial out from it, and that kind of sucks. And if you just dial regular 411, of course it'll ask you for the 50 cents.
Yeah, but who can resist free information? So.
Yeah, here you can dial 411 from an ACTS payphone. When it asks for 50 cents, you just flash the hook switch, and it'll put you right into directory assistance.
Right.
Now, whether or not you pay for the call, once the number is read to you, you won't be able to then pay for the call to be connected. We don't have that option out here in California. It'll just say, it'll just read the number and then it'll hang up on you.
Is your directory assistance automated?
Yeah.
Okay, because I've tried that when it's not automated, and sometimes the operator will look and see, you didn't put in 50 cents, and she'll ask me for that.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Around here, if you actually get an operator, that'd be someone you pay for the call, or else how would you be getting them?
Right. But she's just like,
turn around and say, well, there must be something wrong with the payphone.
Yeah, I did.
I'm not dropping another 50.
In fact, if you listen to my Southern California recording, I was in Garden Grove. I was actually legitimately dropping in coins into the phone, and she said, I can't recognize these coins. I'm sorry.
Wow.
The phone was off.
Well, that sucks. That actually really does happen.
Yeah, it does.
Sometimes I just think they're lying, because sometimes it's like, God damn it, these tones are 100% pure. There's nothing wrong with the payphone's mic.
The thing is, when I was legitimately dropping in coins, the ACTS system didn't recognize it either.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think the operator, even if she sees that it's being recognized, I think sometimes she just tells you, oh, it's not recognizing those coins.
Yeah, whenever I was doing red boxing, I would use a tape recorder, and I would put artificial background noise between each coin. You hear, and then you hear the background noise would cut out, and you hear a pure tone, and the background noise would cut out before the next one. And that gives the illusion that you're in a busy area and that you're dropping in coins, and because whatever coin does go in, it obviously would mute the microphone.
Yeah, it would be clear.
Or even better, you just take some actual coins, right, like this, like some quarters, and you just, kind of go, and you drop in the coin, and beep, 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 press your number again, and beep, 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 beep. Right, exactly.
That's an idea, but the artificial background noise worked every time.
Wow.
Because it just sounds so convincing.
And that's why you're on with a live operator, right?
Social engineering the op with artificial background noise.
Nice.
Clear tone.
Nice.
But are you laughing because it sounds stupid or what?
No, that's nice.
No, that's brilliant, man.
Yeah, that's genius right there.
I've got a tiny URL for that Millennium Manager text. It's tinyurl.com/YQ YKL.
Okay.
And that's a all freaking post.
YQYKL?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, another weird trick in my local area, if you dial zero, you get an automated prompt system instead of the operator, and one of the options is to place a collect call.
I'll be back.
If you do this from a payphone, and you call a number that's on the same switch as the payphone, whenever it goes for the billing confirmation, it'll just connect you blindly without actually asking them for collect billing. And I do believe it doesn't even bill them for the call. But if you call a number that's on a different switch than your own, it'll actually, you know, process and collect.
Wait. What are you talking about now?
Okay, let's say I go to my local ACTS payphone at my local gas station here in New Kensington, Pennsylvania. And I dial zero for operator. I get an automated system. One of the options is to place a collect call. It asks me what number I would like to place my collect call to. If I enter a number that is not controlled by my local switch, it'll process it as a regular collect call, call the person, get confirmation. Once they agree to the charges, put them through. But if I type in the phone number of a number that's on my local switch, controlled by the same switch as that payphone is, it'll say, please wait for billing verification, and just drop you onto the call. And you can talk as long as you want. Yep, it works. And it's like probably misprogrammed somewhere. But I use that stuff
that's
all
wicked.
The time.
And have you tried it in a different city using a different city switch?
It doesn't work. It only works on mine. I tried it in Pittsburgh. You know, I tried calling a Pittsburgh number from Pittsburgh payphone. It didn't work. It processing is collected. It only works in my city. And the 211 only works in my city, too. So maybe I'm not the first one to want to hack my switch. Maybe someone else got it and did it ahead of me and programmed all this cool stuff into it.
Wow, that's insanely weird, man. Yeah, I know out here in Rancho Cucamonga, it used to be on one of the switches in Rancho, you could dial 114, and you'd get an operator, but it wasn't like you dialed zero. You'd get the same zero operator, but she wouldn't know how you were coming in. And you could fool her. You could tell her, yeah, this is AT&T Inwork. We're having a little problem with our trunks here. Need you to process a call to, and then give her any number in the local area out there in California, and she disconnects your call.
Well, that's a pretty cool trick.
Free calls to Gladstone for fish.
So did you think that this was some disgruntled telco employee put a back door in the system, or were they testing it and never turned it off, or how would something like this come to exist?
See, because I was using it for a couple months, and then I went back to try it one day, and I ended up getting a reorder. So I think it was put there by the telco, by someone that worked at the switch.
And they just legitimately accidentally left it on there as a test, or they were doing it just so they can use it for their own personal dirty deeds?
Well, I mean, I can only speculate. I have no idea why they had it on there.
Right.
But, I mean, I used to use it all the time when I drove out there to the Rancho. If I called someone and their line was busy, I'd just dial 114 and say, AT&T Inwards, need a busy line verification for this number. And she'd just go ahead and do it. She didn't know where it was coming from. There was no ANI on her terminal or anything.
Nice.
Yeah.
Thank you for using AT&T.
Oh, we all heard that enough times.
Well, yeah, that's me saying it.
You know, I'm not sure if I told you guys the one time I was in Virginia and I had the payphone that redboxed itself. Did I tell you that story yet?
No,
I haven't heard that story.
Okay. So Lucky's like, what? I was in a city called Newport News, Virginia, and I was, you know, basically killing some time in a shopping center, and they had some old, really nasty-looking payphones. They looked like they haven't had much, you know, use lately, and I was playing with them, and, you know, I was just prank calling some 800-900 numbers like I normally do when I'm really, really bored, and I slammed the phone one time, and I heard what I thought was a quarter tone being played through the earpiece. So I went ahead and I dialed 411, and it was like, you know, 50 cents, please. I took my index finger and whacked the hook switch twice real loud, and it was like, thank you. And it's different, though, than what you describe, how if you just hit it once. If I just hit it once and I wait, it comes on and says, please insert an additional 25 cents.
Oh, so every time you picked up the phone...
No, you have to whack it real hard. You can't just glaze your hand against the hook switch.
Oh,
you have to actually whack it.
So it looks like that maybe there was a quarter stuck in the totalizer, and when you whacked it, it put the quarter through the totalizer, but then back up through the top or something.
Well, all I know is it worked, and I was making, you know, local toll calls, and I was calling. What I was trying to do is I really needed to make some long distance calls, so I was trying to call particular party supply store. So I dialed directory assistance and got the numbers in the local area, and I called each one of those. And, you know, some of them were local, some of them were toll. And as long as it's, you know, local toll, they still allow you to do that with coins. It's only long distance numbers you can't do with coins.
Yeah.
And I was able to eventually find one that you know, worked with the passwords I had. And, you know, I just dialed the number. It's like a sort of $1.50. I whack it, like, you know, six times, and then you're on your way. Yeah, man, I was whacking it by the payphone, man. I got some free calls. It felt great.
That felt great.
Bring your phone text a whole new level.
Wow.
Yeah, but I've never seen that. I'd love to know what happened so I can duplicate that in the future. But maybe you're right, a coin got stuck in there. Maybe someone stuck in some kind of foreign money. It got jammed up. But all I know is it worked, and it worked for, like, days and days after that, too.
Wow.
Jesus.
Well, here's something that I saw once in New York City. And could never explain it. I told Bucky this before. I was walking through Times Square, and all of a sudden, this guy drops the payphone, runs off, and about $20 in quarters pour out of the change slot.
He drops the payphone?
Yeah, drops the payphone, runs across the street, the handset.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So why would he drop it? I mean, he's like, oh, shit, someone's going to come catch me? Were you, like, wearing a badge or something?
No, he's just a street guy.
Huh.
just jackpotted on him?
Maybe he punched in a loot number or something.
That's what it reminds me of, like, the cartoon or something where Daffy Duck, like, calls in, and they're like, you just won $10,000. And he pours out.
Yeah. You won the Telco lottery.
I'm guessing the payphone is broken or something.
So those
thank you
numbers.
For calling the 9X lottery.
Yeah.
You won. You have just won $10 million for the first 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get $10 million for only 3 minutes to spend it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a big problem. So loot numbers, do those things really exist, and how do they work? That's a question.
I wish.
They don't exist?
I don't think so.
I would think
because it doesn't make any sense if you were to somehow get the phone to be able to get the coins out of the coin box and then
right.
back into the coin slot and then into the coin return. Maybe, but once they're in the coin box, they're not going
anywhere.
No,
actually once they're in the keypad area, they wait, you know. They're held
yeah,
there.
Once they're in escrow, but I mean,
you know.
That's just escrow. As soon as the call...
If you disconnected the coin signaling wires, all the coins would just be...
There are no coin signaling wires. It's the same pair of wires.
Oh, they just use green box tones, right?
Green box tones. The coin control on an ACPS phone is it's a single pair line, and then coin return and coin collect are DC 130 volts, either plus or minus. One is return and one is collect.
I know for sure... Who's talking? Go ahead. I know for sure in certain parts of Pennsylvania that the green box tones are indeed still used. Because I had the opportunity to hook a beige box up to a payphone line before.
Mm-hmm.
And I dialed a number, and, you know, I heard it beeping at me, and then came on and asked me for, you know, 75 cents, and I played my tones into the beige.
And then it'll beep back.
It was busy. I hung up. I just hit the flash button, and it came on, and I heard the coin release signal come over clear as day in the green box tones. It wasn't some kind of voltage spike. It wasn't some kind of pulse or reverse polarity. It was the actual tone, the same one you hear.
Well, right. What happens is that tone gets sent to the CO, and then the CO interprets that, and then does the pulse on.
No. I was at the TNI at the payphone. I wasn't.
Right. No. I'm saying. What happens is, well, were you calling within the same switch, or were you calling intra switch, intra office?
I was calling local long distance.
Okay.
But
I was calling. Well,
I was next to the payphone, hooked to the payphone's actual wire.
Well, right, but I'm saying you'll hear that on the line, but the switch will then interpret that and typically do a coin collect coin return.
So that's how really green boxes don't work that way then? I can't just
green
have a friend call me.
Work, but you have to do it in a certain manner. You actually have to.
Right.
Like,
the phone itself has nothing that can interpret tones. The phone, if you're using a regular Western Electric single slot phone, just responds to voltage. It's all electromechanical. The voltage operates a relay. the escrow is basically a relay, and the one voltage sends a relay one way to the turn. The other voltage sends it the other way to the coin box. I mean,
so the whole theory of the green box is just bullshit.
Well, I mean, the tandeming arrangements may use those tones for like operator services type things. So I'm not sure that is built in the SS7 protocol. I can't remember offhand.
Well, the way the file I read said that if you're using a green box, someone calls you from a payphone. The first thing you do is you send the operator tone over the line, and that tells the payphone to listen for tones. And then you send the coin return tone, and then it rejects the money back to them.
Well, maybe it tells the switch to listen for the tones, but certainly not the phone itself.
Yeah, the operator tone tells the switch to listen for more tones, and then the coin return tells the switch to send the certain voltage down. Now, the problem with it is if the switch already knows that a coin collect has happened, it's not going to then allow a coin return because it already knows not to send a coin return.
Well, what if a loot number tells the switch to fucking send it back? You know, to send that tone back into the phone itself.
Well, I mean, the switch knows, depending on what trunk group it picks up, whether
right.
it's connected to an operator services system or whether it's connected to a regular POS number, and it also knows whether or not the number is supervised.
Right. But what if a loot number is automatically just programmed on that line class's default, though? You know what I'm saying? In the little bland, in the little thing of codes that the payphones do possess.
That's a pretty good question.
You know what I'm saying? Like, the switch automatically knows. The switch knows that is a coin class line. You know,
yeah,
so okay. Like if you're on the hook and stuff and you automatically dial a number, any number that you dial automatically goes into that switch. I mean, even if you just press one, you know, okay. And then so what if you punch in that 5-digit loot number or 6 digits in some places and that switch automatically, it goes in and it goes down, you know, the 4 or 5 loot numbers that each exchange patrol has, you know, and it automatically verifies that loot number and then sends the corresponding tone back to the phone.
Maybe
well,
I
to release the money in the keypad.
Can you explain what a loot number is? Can you explain it again, please?
What's that? A loot number? From my understanding, a loot number, like, let's say you got the money that's like trapped in the keypad area, you know, wherever
yeah.
it is up
yeah.
there in the keypad before it goes down in the coin box, okay? Because like when you're done with a call, it doesn't automatically go down in the coin box. You know, it stays there. It stays there for a little while. So like if you can catch it, you know, if you like, let's say you don't have a key, because there's patrols that go around to empty out the coin boxes. You know, and like I've seen them punch in 5-digit codes and money comes out of the phone. I've seen them do this at like McDonald's, time and time again. You know, so I shoulder surfed them one time, you know, and I got the damn number. And this was for San Diego, you know. And every time I did it, you know, like in a certain amount of period of time, you know, because it would vary. Sometimes I'd get 50 cents, sometimes I'd get $4, you know, but it would work. It would work for Bell phones there, for Pac Bell
well,
phones.
I can understand something like that for when the escrow units fail, but that's, you know, just the escrow unit.
Right. I don't think anything failed, though. You know?
So there's two chambers. There's the escrow and the second escrow before it actually hits the coin box.
Yeah, there has to be.
No. There's only one. I mean, I can on my website actually. If you look, there's a picture of the inside of a standard Western Electric 1C2 phone. There's
right.
only one coin relay.
Hmm.
And
well, there's numbers.
The phone.
I don't
you
know.
You drop in your coin. The phone. You know what I bet it is. If like for example, the Proctor test set has a thing where you can run a coin refund test.
Right. I think it's like 5-6 or something.
So what's the loot number for?
I don't know. But,
well,
I've stood next to it.
I think I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean,
In Pac Bell areas on... If you go to a Western Electric phone, you dial the prefix the phone is on plus 0040, and you get the Proctor test set. And then from there, you can run a coin collect test, or a coin collect or coin refund test.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, what you were seeing.
I think the way Johnny's explaining it is he picks up the phone, he dials a 62 number, and he gets money.
Yeah.
And if that's really cool, I'd like to have that number for my local area, because a lot of pay phones around here, and I wouldn't mind making some money.
Wait. You're telling me in Pac Bell areas, if you dial local prefix 0040...
No, the local prefix that the
phone
is on...
No, that's what Tom's saying. Mine was only 5 digits.
Wait. So the local prefix of the phone is on. So it doesn't necessarily have to be the same prefix as what the phone number is.
I don't know.
So it will be the same prefix as the phone number is. If it's in Pac Bell, the switch will have the prefix of the payphone, plus 0040.
Now, is that a real phone number, or just some kind of code you can dial from the phone?
No, that's a real phone number to the proctor test app, but you can only dial it from that switch.
That's what I was going to say. So if you call it from outside the switch, you just get, like, an error recording.
A reorder or something.
Right.
Okay. Because I know here we can dial 117 and get proctor test set, but, you know, it's like, how are you going to dial that from outside?
Yeah, because I know the payphone told the money, because, like, at airports, you know, because I used to do it at airports, too. You know, and I've been next to payphones where nobody's even been there at that payphone, and I've heard money drop in the cash box all by itself. You know, and nobody was around it for like 30, 40 minutes. You know?
So you just go around and loot all your phones and get like $50 a day.
Yeah, you know. I mean, so there has to be like some sort of time limit or you know, physical dollar amount that it holds before it drops in
the
cash.
Well, my question is this an actual just regular boring old Western Electric phone, or is it something newer?
Oh, I don't know. It was always a Bell phone. It was always a Bell phone, just like your regular standard Bell phone. You know, it wasn't Millennium, didn't have any display screens. It didn't have
it would work on
the ones with volumes.
Was it actually a Western Electric phone, or was it like a co-op that only looks like a Western
Electric? No, it was an actual Bell phone. Yeah. I mean, it always said, like, Pac Bell or, like, U.S. West.
Well, obviously, it was owned by the phone company, but I'm talking
right.
about the actual company that manufactured it. Was it manufactured by Western Electric, or was it manufactured by some other company?
I'm not sure. It was probably Western Electric, because it looks like, you know, the tough-looking phones, you know?
Right. But
you know, they look like they're sturdily built.
But the Coca companies manufacture them to look just like Western Electric phones, so you can't be sure about that.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I don't know who the phone itself is.
If it was at an airport, though, they're most likely going to be Bell phones.
Yeah, I mean, they were all Bell phones. Everyone that
right,
this worked on was
the,
Bell
even
phones.
The telephone company will use non-Western Electric phones, because obviously Western Electric hasn't existed for
right.
20 years. Oh. So it really depends on a whole number of factors, not just what the name on the phone is.
Right. I don't know. It had the bell thing right on it, though. And
let me point you at the image, a diagram of what's inside of a Western Electric phone. Let me remember what the URL is.
It could have been that the guy that I saw had just taken, like, a tissue or something and stuck it up to the coin return slot and then come back and pulled it out. But
right.
I don't know why it wouldn't collect the money.
Yeah, it wouldn't run off.
Okay. It's
www.stromcarlson.com/payphones/cncrca007.jpg.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And this is a detailed diagram of the inside of a standard payphone.
Yeah, well, it's a photograph of a standard payphone with my annotations added.
Right.
Okay, so what next?
So you're looking at it, right?
No, I'm not.
I'm not. I don't have internet here.
I was getting the arguments over here with John, like, still don't know what that goddamn green button does on the Millennium.
What's the green button?
There's nothing behind it.
Yes, there is, man, I'm telling you.
Why would they have a green button
if
it doesn't do anything?
No, what do you think it is? Is there's, you know, on the Millennium, there's a speed dial button pad.
Right.
And basically, in order to get at the window, in fact, I'll open my Millennium now. Let me open it up now.
Okay.
There's like a little plexiglass thing that's in between the speed dials. There's like a top row of speed dials and a bottom row of speed dials.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a plexiglass that has the insert that tells you what each speed dial on the Millennium is. And if you take that out, there's a little green rubber thing, which Strom claims is just to push the plexiglass out from behind there.
Right.
I mean, I have the phone open now. I have my hand in here, and I've got my finger on top of the little green rubber thing, and I'm able to move my finger up a good half an inch before hitting a piece of metal.
Wow.
No, not a piece of metal, the edge of the circuit board.
Me and Big B and Pooley, we used to go to these Millennium payphones out of Ralph's in Chino, California out here, and for the longest time, they didn't have plexiglass or anything. It was just that little green rubber button was exposed. And we'd press it with, like, a pin, and we'd hear in the earpiece, it would make the same beep that when you put in a quarter into the Millennium, you'll hear the same sort of beep. And so we always wondered what the fuck that button did.
It's not a physical coin release, is it?
No, it isn't. I mean, I'm pushing it now, and the plexiglass in front. I'm pushing it now. The plexiglass and above the keys is bending, so
right.
I can grab it with my fingers and pull it out.
Wow.
Just saying, if anyone finds out what the fuck that button is,
I'm telling you what it is, Lucky.
So you think it might be a credit button?
It doesn't do anything.
Like, Tom claims it's not a button at all, but like I've heard it beep when I press the fucking button. So
you might.
I don't know what the hell.
You said you were using a pen?
Yeah, I was using like a pencil, like to like push in the green button.
You can't
just press it with your finger. You have to like use like a pen or something to press it.
Because you're not able to reach it with your finger, right?
Oh yeah.
Is that why?
Well, I don't think you can push it far enough into your finger.
It's sort of exposed, but yeah, you can't reach it because there's like a circle around it or some such.
Wow.
I was thinking you might have been shorting something out on the circuit board.
Perhaps, but I there's nothing there to short out. That doesn't connect to anything. That's what I'm saying. There's nothing that it physically connects to.
Interesting.
Or maybe there's more than one model Millennium phone, and he was using a different model than you.
Perhaps there may have been some sort of like hacked up thing behind it that he was short circuiting. But based on what I've seen, the manual I've read for the phone and the phone in front of me, that doesn't make any sense.
Well, how many models of Millennium phones are there?
Well, there's only really the one.
Yeah.
Well, I think they have like the smart card readers for them.
Yeah, they do. They got like they got ones that take credit cards.
I've seen them have the card reader on another side. I've seen the ones that got the data port jack.
Yeah. I like the ones
I mean,
that were up in
it's
US.
All just used. Yeah, it's all basically just variations on the same phone, though.
Yeah.
But
they're different models.
Credit card
though.
Number if you see a credit card in there.
Yeah.
Beg your pardon?
If you use a credit card to pay for your call by swiping the card to a reader, how does it actually verify your number?
It dials into the manager, passes the number onto the manager, and the manager does card verification.
Mm.
Wow.
Nice.
You know, that might be a really cool way to verify card numbers.
Yeah.
If I can write my own client software for the Millennium Manager,
hmm.
I can just verify numbers all day long.
Yeah. Who needs a merchant anymore, you know?
Dude, hey, you know it's weird, actually. Glad you brought that up about the Millennium. I used to have an American Express gift card back in 97.
A gift card?
It was like a gift card. It was I put like 20 bucks on it. I used it to sign up for eBay.
Right.
But anyways, well, actually, it was probably 98 or 99, not 97. But anyways, I got this American Express gift card. When the balance ran out, it ran to zero. And the first thing I did with that card when it got to a $0 balance was I went over to a Millennium payphone. I stuck the card in. It said, thank you for using TTE. And then I dialed a number, and it went through. No verification whatsoever. And now when I try and do that, it'll say, thank you for using TTE, but then it'll come back and say, like it dials up some merchant number to verify the card, and then it says, like, you know, that card's not valid or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So,
well, here's what's funny.
But
well, obviously they changed the software. They were having trouble with that.
Right, for the Millennium?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm wondering. Yeah. So is that a software issue? Is there possibly other phones like still on the
I think it's all software. It's all software.
Yeah.
Now
so
here's what's cool. I was
in areas, in some telco areas, I could still theoretically maybe use gift cards as long as they have a correct credit card algorithm to place calls.
Well,
theoretically,
the Millenniums are on the X25 network, so. I'm wondering if it's not the same nationwide.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering.
You're sure? I'm sure it depends on the telephone company.
So I got a question for you. Your Millennium phone, when you go
mm-hmm.
to program the manager number in there, how do you go about doing that?
Okay, well, let me do this.
Well, perhaps I can just ask you an easier question.
Uh-huh.
If you were able to somehow crack the communications code, figure out what protocol it uses, and create your own emulation of the manager, on your home phone line, would then be possible to go to a Millennium phone, type in some kind of secret password at the keypad, have it dial that number instead of the number it's programmed into, and then the phone will actually call in and reprogram itself, and you can use it from there on?
Yeah, you could. The only problem with that is to access the craft access test menu, you need the key for the side of the phone. And
so you need the physical
without
key.
That key, yeah, you need to physically open the phone in order to gain access.
Oh, so there's no password for it.
Well, there is a password, then you need to physically get to the phone, so.
Oh.
Yeah, disable the alarm.
Okay. What idea is down the toilet?
Do you guys have any idea where you can get smart cards that will let you make calls on the phone?
Well, actually, if you go to Telus territory, this just happened to me. I was in Telus territory. I made a local call that did not go through, and it took my 25 cents. So I called the operator. I said, hey, the phone took my 25 cents. Can I get a refund, please? And they said, well, we can credit it to your account. And well, I'm not a Telus customer. I live in Las Vegas. And she said, oh, well, we can try and credit it to your account there. I said, I'd prefer it if you mailed me a refund. Okay, what's your address? So I gave them my address. And lo and behold, what appears in my mail yesterday but a $3 smart card from Telus.
Nice. Wow.
Oh, man, I have to do that. I wonder if you can just call 300 number.
I get my hands on one of them.
Yeah. See, but I don't know if I want to actually try and using it, because it's still in this little package, and I've never been to Canada before. It's my only trip to Canada, so I figure maybe I'll keep it around and get another one or something.
Well, go back and do it again, like 5 or 10 times.
Yeah, or I'll get my friend in Canada to do it for me.
Now I'm going to have to try and social engineer 800-646-0000.
Well, this was a Telus local operator, though, so I don't know if...
Yeah, but I could just tell them, hey, I was in Alberta the other day, and your phone ain't my quarter. What the hell? Send me a smart card, bitch.
Wow.
Now, smart cards,
right,
though, don't they actually keep
the
value? Damn it. Okay. I was asking, smart cards, don't they actually keep the value on the card? Wouldn't it be possible to copy those and just use them over and over again?
Nice.
That was a question. I'm not sure if it's possible or not.
It's not actually possible to copy the card. However, you could emulate the card and ret protect it. If you've ever read into, like, satellite card hacking, it's a nice concept.
So, that's another thing is that Kinko's uses prepaid smart cards. I'd love to figure out how to spoof those because, you know, the man who gets free Kinko's is the man who can travel with the fucking U.S. no problem and always be at the computer and be able to, you know, make nice full-color laser prints and all that good stuff.
He's the spoofing master. Ask him.
Kinko's, man. We all know the Macintosh Kinko's trick?
What's that?
Go ahead and tell it for our new callers.
Okay. Well, what you do is you go to the kiosk and you go ahead and you get yourself a Kinko smart card, but don't bother putting any money on it. Or if you've got a dead credit card that has no value on it, go ahead and stick it in there, into the Macintosh. It has to be a Macintosh computer. And if it's the Kinko's card, it'll hesitate for like 15, 20 seconds, kick it back out and say, insufficient balance. If it's a credit card, it'll probably take another 45 seconds, it'll kick it out and say, you know, insufficient balance. But what you do is as soon as you stick that in there, you take a paper clip or a pin or something on the front of the Macintosh computer, there's what's called an interrupt key. It's a small little hole. It has a picture of a triangle on it. You jam your pin in there, and it's similar to Microsoft Windows All Control Delete, but with the Macintosh, it halts the entire system and brings up a command prompt. You type in letter G, as in go, space F-I-N-D-E-R, and push enter. What that is telling the computer to do is close everything that's running except for the Finder. And it'll close Kinko's custom billing software, stop everything in its tracks. It'll stop it checking the credit card for verification or the smart card for balance. And the little card reader, the card will stay in there. It'll stay inside that machine, but you'll be allowed to use the Macintosh computer because the Finder is essentially the explorer for the computer. It's the operating system core. You then continue to use the Macintosh like normal for as long as you want. And when you're ready to go, if you boot the computer, it'll kick the card back out, you stick it back in your wallet, and you leave. And the reason why you want to keep your card in that computer is if one of the Kinko's employees happens to notice that you're not being billed for your session because they have a management console, you tell the guy, I stuck my card in the machine, it dropped me to a desktop, I thought everything was peachy. He'll tell you you're full of shit, reboot the computer, it'll kick out the card at you, and be like, oh, we're sorry for the inconvenience. Whenever I was hitchhiking and touring the U.S., I hit so many Kinkos, and I spent literally 16 hours, each one of them, on the Macintosh for 16 hours straight. I've seen 2.5 shifts in that time. No one ever questioned me, with the exception of Pittsburgh, ironically enough, my home city. They told me, you've been here for a very long time. I just checked the management. You're not being billed for this. What's going on here? I was like, I stuck in my credit card. It seemed like it was working fine to me. So he restarts my computer. The credit card comes out right in front of him. He's like, oh, well, I don't know how that happened. And I was like, oh, yeah, you know, I don't even know how much money's on that card. I was just going to use it until it kicked out. He went up and he ran the card. It came back. It was, you know, no balance available. And he ended up telling me, you know, don't worry about it. It's our fault. Our machine screwed up. You know, have a nice day.
Yeah.
And it works every time.
So you've been charging $12 an hour. These are city machines.
Actually, the Macintosh just costs $24 an hour because they're considered design stations.
Jesus fucking.
Yeah, Kinko's, the regular computers are $12 an hour. The Macintosh are $24.
That's bullshit.
And all you got to do is stick in your card, and while it's processing, hit the interrupt key, type in G space finder, enter, and you're done. Use that computer as long as you like. It's a really sweet little trick. Anyway, is John, you back here yet?
I'm here.
Certainly am. This is quite funny. The Millennium software apparently never got updated. I'm running the credit card test, and it says, insert card in the blue slot. Getting back to the original days when they had blue slots.
Right.
Huh.
Easy.
Nice.
Well, can't you update your software if I have one of the Millennium Manager numbers you have? Or don't you want to?
No. This is a new Millennium. I'm saying the firmware. The firmware is different.
Well, can't you flash that via the phone number, or is that not possible?
I don't think that's possible.
Huh.
Yeah, now I'm wanting one of those Hayes smart modems even more.
Well, we got to make sure it's going to work, first of all. But the
idea,
well,
I'll give you a number, and I'll let you play with it since you have one.
But you need the key in order to change the phone number that thing calls out.
I can do that. That's not a problem.
Well, I'm trying to think
anywhere I can change that.
Well, yeah, but I'm trying to think of how we can scam the real ones in operation. Because obviously you can't, you know, pop them open with the key because you get the damn key
and
take the money anyway.
That's how I figured out. I went up to real payphones, and all you do really is quite simple. You go up to the phone, and first you start dialing a call for which it will have to dial the manager.
Yeah.
And then, while you're in the middle of dialing it, from a second phone line, you dial the number of the phone. That number starts ringing, but the phone just, you know, ignores the ring. The line starts ringing. So then, what you do is you finish dialing your number, and as soon as the phone picks up the line to call the manager, you do this. And you trick it into thinking there's a dial tone there. It will then touch tone out the manager number at you, thinking you're the switch.
And there's your man in the middle. Once you do that,
yeah,
you
just
can
record that, decode your touch tones, and there you go. Boom, boom, boom.
Well, not just sure, the tone of the touch tone gets the manager's phone number, but what I'm worried about is able to reprogram that phone without the key. If I were to emulate that trick that you just described,
mm-hmm.
and then have it, you know, connect to my computer with my emulated manager software, and I were to both say, yeah, well, these are the new rates, and this is the new phone number you dial, and, you know, don't bother charging people for calls anymore, and okay, have a nice day. Not only will that phone be free, but you have a bogus phone number there, so we'll never be able to update again, and it will always continue to be free. Does that sound like something that could work?
Right.
Yes?
Perhaps, yeah. I mean, if you had the key, you could do that theoretically.
Yeah, but you don't have the key. But this method, you don't need the key, because it's dialing the manager, so it thinks. So I think we may have just unraveled the Millennium phone.
What would be a number that it would require?
Every time you go to place an outgoing call, it dials up the manager first?
No. He said there were specific numbers that it has to dial the manager.
Yeah, what's an example?
Like if you're placing a toll call or you're placing a credit card call or something.
Okay.
So if I stick in my my prepaid credit card, it'll call the manager first, huh?
Mm-hmm. Anytime it goes, please wait after you've dialed the number, then it's dialing the manager.
Cool. Now, another thing is, I'm going to probably dive onto this project. I'm not really good at decoding communication protocols,
mm-hmm.
but if the manager is as deceivable as I think it is, we can do maybe even a brute force credit card, you know, authorization where it just starts trying to authorize random numbers with random expiries until it finds one that works. Imagine an Amiga, but if this thing, probably all you gotta do is send, this is my phone number, here's the credit card and expiry, I'm verifying, it kicks back a yes or a no. Is that pretty much how you would expect it to work? Strom?
I think so, yeah.
Well, that'd be so easy to spoof. It's not even funny. Sounds like an upcoming HBS project to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, after this hairball, I'll get online with you, and we'll start. I'll give you a number, and we'll see if your modem connects to it.
Well, see, I don't have the software. I'm not even sure how to put the modem into the special mode, but I know it involves about 15 AT commands in order to put the modem into this particular mode. But whenever we want to update a security panel for where I work, we use a special software that's actually distributed by a company called Fire and Burglary Instruments, FBI, and it actually uses a modem and sends a whole bunch of commands to them, and it takes a long time to initialize the modem, but it makes this really weird, peculiar ticking noise. It goes it's pretty cool. It sounds like TTY, but it's definitely different than TTY. And although I have one of the modems in my possession, I haven't deciphered the commands yet to make it work. So I'm going to have to get some kind of null modem session going.
I'm sure a quick Google search might reveal something.
Possibly, but I don't know for sure.
That never hurts to mess the look.
Oh, of course not. But what I could do is I could just get a null modem session between two computers, open a terminal program in the one, and then from the second one run the software, and just I can just view the commands on my screen, plain as day. And it's definitely a project worth looking into because, I mean, how are they going to stop that? They can't change the management software because then the phones won't work. They can't change the phone numbers of the managers because then the phones won't work. And they can't, it's one of those things where it's just they can't fix it once the exploit gets out.
Mm-hmm.
So theoretically we'll be able to run, you know, credit card authorizations to check for valid numbers. And my program could be so complicated as to the fact where you program in 100 phone numbers for all the millennium managers you know. And it'll verify, you know, every time it goes to verify number, pick a random one. Pick a random phone number from your phone number database of the phones accessed by that, you know, particular manager. And you can just, you know, you got a credit card number list. You got
10-10-2880 before it dials the Millennium Manager.
Well, assuming it's toll-free, which they probably are, right?
Yeah, the ones I've seen are all toll-free.
And there you go. I mean, the software could be super elite. And it'll pick a random manager. It'll use a random payphone number assigned to that manager. And it can verify credit card numbers off of a list.
Yeah, and then, or you could generate card numbers and then expirations that are 3 years ahead of this date, you know.
Yeah, but that's a little more miss than hit. But if you got a list of numbers from any particular source, this is a real easy way to find out if they got any money on them. Sure, you're only charging. I mean, I'm not sure how the protocol works. It may even specify how much the charge is going to be. So you might be able to run, you know, $1,000 checks or not, but I somehow doubt it. But even if you're only running a check for like $5, still, you know that number is valid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, this could turn out to be a really big deal, and I'm going to start working on that right away.
Yeah, and they wouldn't be able to put a hold on the card for fraud for using a known merchant account because you're using fucking, you're making a payphone call. Anyone can go to a payphone and you know, put their card in, so how do they know if you're at a payphone or not?
Right.
Unless they start doing ANI verifications on the toll-free number.
Well, even then, I mean, the software can be evolved to forge any.
Yeah, through ANI or something.
Through some kind of, like, asterisk or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, you know, I can see this going places. Because, I mean, obviously there's got to be thousands and thousands of these manager numbers, right, Strom?
Well, not really thousands and thousands. Maybe more like dozens and dozens.
There's not a whole bunch of these?
I would think there's like one main number for for a specific region of the telco.
Well, yeah, if they give one of these to any idiot with 50 payphones, there's a lot of private payphone owners out there. I'm sure there's a lot of these numbers, and a lot of good social engineering can probably get you a whole list of all of them.
But no, you see, it's all the same number is the problem, I think.
It's all pointed to one number.
Yeah.
Even better. So, but if they're still playing the one phone number, they're getting so many calls, they don't know what's what.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah, and especially if you're spoofing ANI and the phone number of
the phone number and a bullshit serial number. They won't know what the fuck's going on.
Right. And see, what's funny is that it doesn't seem like they even bother to cross-check the serial number against the number of the phone itself, because, like, when I call in, I'll enter the phone number of the phone I want to emulate, and then just enter in some random serial number, like 555555555. Even that will work, and it'll go through just fine.
Oh, wow.
Does your machine have a card reader in it?
It certainly does.
Have you tried verifying dead and inactive cards, see if you get a bill for it?
Well, see, that's the thing. I have not yet had the balls to try actually having it dial the number directly, is the thing.
Well, don't dial it directly. Dial 10-10-2880, and then emulate the dial tone with your voice and let it dial the rest of the number out. But the point is, you know, bill a call to a dead credit card and see if it comes back and denies you, and then turn around and try billing it to your own credit card and see if you get, you know, wait a month and see if it shows up on your bill.
Hmm.
And, I mean, this could be really, really going somewhere. This sounds like a wide-open system that has lots of uncheckedness to it.
Perhaps, yeah.
It's not
maybe
even
I'll
checking
try
the serial. I mean, holy crap.
What did you say?
Uncheckness.
Don't you love the wonders of made-up English?
You mean it doesn't exist? I've been using that word for years.
It's really uncheckedliness.
Uncheckedliness, there we go. Extra syllable.
Well, what was that old Pacific Bell Yellow Pages ad? If it's not in here, it probably doesn't exist.
Yeah. There was a lot of stuff that didn't exist.
Yeah, I just think that's such a stupid thing to say for a company. If we don't have it, then you don't need to know.
Yeah.
If
well, I think actually, I mean, for...
If it's not in here, it's probably left on default.
That's a good one. Oh, man.
All right, so you want to wrap this up?
How long have we been going?
About 2 hours, maybe. How long have we been going, Abbott?
About 2 hours.
Yeah.
Has it really been 2 hours already?
Yeah.
It's been about 2 hours, I think.
Well, what do you think, Strom? You want to wrap it up?
Yeah, let's wrap it up. I'm kind of running out of things to talk about.
All right.
You know we're not really running out of things to talk about. You know if we kept
going. Well, I'm running out of things to talk about. That
well, let's put it this way. At least stuff we'll put on the air.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I think we're pushing our luck on what we want to broadcast anyway.
All right. Anything anybody want to promote? Strom, any projects or anything you want to promote? Websites?
The $3 TELUS payphone card, available by dialing your local TELUS operator and claiming you lost 25 cents in the payphone.
There you go. Owned!
Lucky, anything you want to promote?
The Fifth Hope. Be there, bitches.
I'll be there.
Nice. White Sword, anything you want to promote?
White.sword.tk.
Alright.
And let's not forget stromcarlson.com.
Which I am on right now. I'm looking for your payphone pictures, actually.
Nice.
It's if you click on coin operated telephones, it's right there.
A little tech, anything you want to promote?
Yeah, check out Big Magazine, design.com.
Nice. Alright, and this was episode number 6. Anybody want to promote anything else? Oh?
Millennium Manager, dog.
Alright, Millennium Manager.
Coming soon, the HBX Manager Emulation Program. For all your credit card verification and payphone reprogramming needs.
Well, where's your phone at, Tom?
Beg your pardon?
Where's your phone at?
My payphone?
Yeah.
It's on my desk.
And with that, we're going to call this episode done.